We offer to all, in times past and present, with the holy doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The replication of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyami, Kapiyami, Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance, again and yet again may it be so. Dharma, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyami, Kapiyami, Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance, again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyami Tatiyami Sala. I turn to the Holy Order for guidance, again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Yidra-nirodha, yami-kali-kata, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, omniscience to wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves its path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I am to confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct aim. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi, tatiyampi, sabha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other. As the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Thank you.
We are fearing and suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Let's see, just I'm tremendously struck with the way it just dropped in this moment was how big practice is.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of I just recently had a shift, a number of things that I haven't really realized have been sort of background stories, I would say, that are being framed through self-hate, sort of just through grace, having those revealed and having them framed in a really different way.
Oh, so there's been these background stories that have kind of been fueled by or framed in self-hate,
mm-hmm.
and just having those brought to awareness, it sounds like, and so that they're now framed in an entirely different way and not...
Yeah. Sharon made a comment during the last, we just finished a retreat, and I think it was maybe even the first night of the retreat, it was something along the lines of, you know, sort of one of those, someone was seeing something and sort of a, gosh, how did I not see that before, place, and that, you know, when we're ready for it, that's when we take it in, that's when we really, truly see it, and there's a way in which, it actually wasn't that conversation, but another one, where I think it was similar in that it you almost can't say I saw it in that moment. I've been seeing it somehow. But it just, then when we're ready, it's like, quick, 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 quick. Whoa.
When you see it, you realize it has been there.
Yeah.
You know, you have been seeing it. But then when you're ready, it just... You really see it.
And so, actually, it's funny. It's all just coming together as I say it. But I made a recording. So this is one of the things that's framed really differently. I made a recording that what came out as I was recording was this appreciation for the process and the practitioner in the process. Mm-hmm. And the image that dropped in was, I think it's from that movie, What the Bleep, mm-hmm. where they talk about how supposedly when Columbus's ships were arriving, you know, in what's now America, that folks couldn't see them because they'd never seen anything like that. So there was nothing in the frame of reference, oh, there's a ship coming in, huh? But that supposedly the shamans could see the ripples in the water and knew there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And also couldn't see them at first, but stayed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what came up in this recording was, wow, isn't that extraordinary to have the willingness over a period of time to metaphorically stand there and go, huh, something's out there, and I'm actually not seeing it. But the funny part is, even in the I'm not seeing it, we are starting to see it, and that's kind of the fun recognition. So instead of the, how long are you going to stand on that shore? And, you know, and you haven't yet. And it, but to realize another comment, I think, in that, that Sherry said in that was that it's not as if anything has been wasted. Right? It's all part of it. And then, and we see it. And I think, even as I say that, we're trained to think that the seeing it is the completion, and that's the best part of the good. But there's a way in which the process itself becomes the divine adventure or something.
And as you described it, it's you know, it's like seeing the, if we go to that place of, gosh, why didn't I see this before? You know, which sounds like more self-hate, like I should have seen that.
Exactly.
Before.
That's the way it's been framed.
It's been framed, and then we're robbed of that joy of the, what it is like to be practicing awareness, to just be watching and watching everything.
Yeah, the other thing that drops in as I'm saying that is, I heard someone say yesterday that basically there are two energies in life, in the world, fear and love. And I was really looking at that last night, doing a recording around it, and what I was seeing was, wow, that's really, that's very clarifying and very helpful in a sense, because what I was seeing anyway in my experience as I was reporting about it is it feels like love is and fear gets put on top of it. So with that, if that's really so, there's fear and there's love, then as I'm being aware, I can just be aware of when there's a fear process and in a sense just stop doing that. And then there's love. And I was looking at it because I was sitting there and I was recording and I was doing some power work with stuff, and I realized, well, this is a process of love. And so the voice would not, you know, I mean, how is that love? Kind of like prove it to me, you know, sort of thing. But I realized that anything that isn't fear is love. And so really that's very, very clarifying as I go about my day.
Very clarifying. It's not like love is something that we have to go out there and seek. It's there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when we stop that process of fear, there's love.
There's love.
Yeah.
So anyway, just enjoying all of it, I guess.
Yeah. It's not love without being in love.
Yeah. It's not love without being in love.
So I have been listening to some recordings that have come back around from the Seven Story Mountain, the Thomas Merton that I recorded excerpts that were inspiring. And what a couple of them really tie in with what I've been looking at. So there is a theological term, as far as I can tell, from that he was using called necessity of means. Necessity of means. And my understanding of what that is that there are certain things, means, that are in our lives that we just have to do in order, it's necessary for salvation. So there's something in our life that we just have to go through, see through, whatever, in order for salvation, enlightenment, whatever. And even if we don't do them, even through no fault of our own, even through no guilt or just whatever, it's not possible to, the salvation's not possible. It's just a necessity that happens. And he was telling a story about his father having a brain tumor. And he said, souls are like athletes, and they need an opponent to, you know, the contest, if you will, to go up against, or I don't know how he said it, but, you know, to be. And I'm looking at that in terms of, in two levels. One is what's going on in the country, and what's going on with me in this life. And I could make a really good argument that I have not had very strong, you know, I haven't had a lot of suffering. I haven't had a lot of adversity. Mm-hmm. Never had a life-threatening ailment, knock on wood, or anything like that. But I have had what's in front of me to practice with. And as a world, we have what's in front of us to practice with. And I sort of am looking at it in terms of that's what's necessary to whatever is right here. And this is what is being offered to see, to experience, to transcend, if it's the suffering, to whatever. And how much we have the tremendous opportunity that we have as awareness practitioners, or as in Merton's world, as baptized, sanctified Christians, you know, to embody that presence in the face of whatever is in front of us.
So let's see if I'm following here. So what you're seeing is what we're given to work out our own salvation diligently with is what is exactly right here in front of us.
Yeah.
You know, and like you were looking at, well, I haven't had life-threatening illnesses or whatever, but what you have is right here.
Mm-hmm.
And what's required is to bring presence to whatever it is that has been presented.
Yeah. What's on offer.
Whatever is on offer.
Yeah.
And that's the, not your words, but that's the portal or the what forgiveness to work out our salvation.
Yeah. And it's the process.
It's the process.
That, because, gosh, the karmic pull to go to the content, to the stuff, to the, even if it's an action or a, it's like where the will, kind of the stupid will can come in and take it into a direction of, well, I this that means this, or let's do that, or whatever. And what Merton says is, as long as we act out of our natural selves, which I translate as that, we're going to end up in hell. That's just so plain and simple. We're going to end up in hell, you know. And we know that. Who of us doesn't know that? It's like what all roads from the ego lead to the train wreck. That's the way we talk about it often, you know. And so to stay in the process of that moment or that presence, no matter what, is such a priceless opportunity, not only for our own salvation, whatever that means, but for I don't know. I'm seeing it for the good of all.
For the good of all. Yeah, because we practice that presence, that process of presence, no matter what that's presenting itself.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being following ego into that train wreck, that, you know, as far as you can see, that's what's available for the good of all.
Mm-hmm.
For the good of the practitioner, for the good of all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something in that reflection about what I think it's on the radio show that we were talking about it a week or two ago about what is the word? Subjugate? Is that the word? When you put it under, put the wants, put some desires under the larger desire, you know, of waking up and ending suffering, or of that, what I've just been talking about, you know. So to every desire, you know, even the desire to want to be a contributor, even the desire to want to anything that takes a person out of what is on offer in that moment.
Well, as you said earlier, staff, you know, that would be going to the content. And then that is going to take us to more suffering and arrange the content. So to just, you know, to make waking up and ending suffering or to come to the presence, the overriding suffering.
Yeah, and just one last thing I want to kind of say out loud because it's arising right now is that place that I can seem to get, that I get tripped up or I get into a little bit of confusion about is when there's an interpretation of, well, this is life. You know, there's, oh, I think life is dropping in to do this, or life is dropping in to do that. And that seems to be the danger point for the ego to come in, and because that is an interpreter, you know, who's the interpreter? Who's that saying that?
So that's just that little point, a little critical point.
Yeah.
That you are aware of that that's a danger point, or you know, that can take you away from that process of being in the presence.
Yeah.
And it's ending suffering when it can be closed in this, you know, practice language, like, you know, life is asking me to do such and such.
I think so, yeah. I don't know, but that's a good place to stop looking.
Good place to look.
Two things. One is we just finished a retreat, a year of practice retreat, and I wasn't able to attend the last group, and I just wanted to, because what I would normally say is, wow, thank you so much, because I mean, for actually any retreat, there's just such a contribution.
So I can't understand. Yep. I'm going to turn the light on here.
Okay.
I see nothing.
Yeah.
The other thing, Sequoia, I'm having a little trouble hearing.
Okay.
People could raise voices.
Okay.
A little.
I have water.
I can do that. So kind of like, wow, you know, just the contribution of people coming here and working together on this journey of transformation. And in your practice, it's the closest thing we have to what it's like to live here as a resident monk. And so there's a fair amount of working meditation. And I couldn't stop smiling all day after the screens were done. And it's funny because I was laughing at myself because for literally years, because we sit in front of screens while we eat, you know, three times a day for years now. And I would look through these screens and it's that place of like, wow, these really need to be clean. Wow, these are really dirty. Wow, somebody should clean these, you know. We should do something about that. And when you live with a fairly small group of folks, when it's we should do something about it, eventually comes back to, how about you? And yes. So thank goodness some people came here with some willingness, and that's amazing. I don't know what it is about it. I mean, it's a screen.
Yeah.
But I guess I just project just a lot of love and care, and now this person who is going to sit in front of those screens and eat these meals gets to just keep appreciating that attention and care and love that these folks came and gave over and over and over again. And I just love that.
You just love that. And we cleaned the screens.
Yeah.
You know, there was this thing that was just, you know, and just in your awareness for quite a period of time, and just allow of having folks come on retreat. And then there was that we, you know. The we is expanded from, you know, from the smaller group to the larger, you know, working group. And there is the clean screens that just
get
that embodiment of love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That embodiment of love. And as I was just looking, the other thing that was so joyous about it is it kind of frees me from that particular conversation. and that freeing of that particular conversation, whatever it is always possible in that process of care and attention and love. Because, of course, the willingness is here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the attention steals the energy of that willingness. I mean, if you put all those conversations in the head about the screen and took that energy, I could have cleaned all the screens myself, you know? And just, and not in a I should or well, why didn't you or that kind of thing, but just seeing that possibility of when we get out of that conversation, all the energy and willingness and love and care that's available.
Yeah, just see all the energy that's available to sort of drop the conversation.
Yeah.
And just be with what, well, we were talking in the earlier part, yeah. Be with what life is dropping in, you know.
What's like, in front of me.
What's in front of you. You know, like you said earlier, there was that conversation going on and on about the screen needing to be cleaned, and yeah, I'm someone.
I'm a someone.
Yeah. But then continuing how much energy it took to just continue having that conversation rather than...
Yeah, and actually, as you're reflecting that back, it just reminds you, this is a great place for recording and listening.
Mm-hmm.
To record what I'm talking about right now, because it's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, well, something should be different, but I can't do it, I don't have time. You know, something about, I'm somehow outside of that someone who could.
Yeah.
And just to remind myself of the freedom that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and maybe it's just getting out of the conversation and another, a life drops in another idea. It doesn't mean, like, me, it's all up to me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But just that there's all kinds of options.
Mm-hmm.
For cleaning screens and whatever else,
right.
when we get out of that conversation.
Yeah, when we get out of that conversation and open the door to offer, you know, maybe opportunities that wouldn't be present if we weren't, you know, in that conversation.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, the recorder. I'm reminded of someone that's been talking about Natalie, you know, to just talk about, you know, going around your day.
Yeah.
And imagine just like if we just recorded, gosh, this needs to be cleaned, and then to listen back to it, you know.
Oh, wow, that's a good idea.
There's an opportunity to,
because it's like I'm not hearing that.
Yeah.
That's right. That's such a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not hearing it. I'm thinking it.
Yeah.
There's the thoughts, but I'm not seeing it.
Uh-huh.
Right. Oh, that's really good. And then just the last thing is sort of kind of what people were talking about or what was coming up for me. I do these recordings every Sunday about the voices lie and say what is true, and they're these sort of quite involved long love letters. And today what was going on and what I'm hearing what other people are talking about is talking about how life works. And it seems like, so the lie was essentially like the voices lie and say, you know, they basically do this thing about, well, I mean, you know how to direct the attention and record and listen. Why do you keep choosing hate? Why do you keep choosing, you know, that kind of thing? And the response was essentially just talking about how things work. Not in explaining why or anything like that, because we don't know, but just, well, I mean, this is how the relationship with the voices started. You know, there was this innocence, and it was talked into abandoning the innocence to survive this crazy world that happens when you're put into a karmically conditioned world.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if that was necessary or not, but that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's continuing to happen, even though it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a really old habit. And it's just, there's just this really kind way of describing what's going on,
mm-hmm.
independent of your bad if or your good if. And I think it kind of reminded me, as I was listening to other people, I feel like describing similar things around that, their view of how this is working, is it becomes a little bit, there's like, it's kind of like if someone died in your life that was really important, and you went through this like, you know they didn't, or, you know, or shouldn't have happened, or it would have been different if I would have, you know, this denial, bargaining. And it kind of was moving me to this place. It was sort of like, it's okay, but they died. They did. And I know, you know, they did. And it was, that's kind of how I felt like, yeah, I know that this has been something that felt like you had to have. I know. But you don't have to. And we're letting go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to be upset about that or have whatever reaction you have.
Mm-hmm.
But just that. And it brought me to just a place of being really humble.
Mm-hmm.
And more in that place of subjugating those other desires, mm-hmm. you know, the lead that I keep being enticed to for the big desire, the goal, the giving ourselves over to the thy will be done. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that just seemed like a real kindness, a step in the process rather than, you really should stop doing that to be like this.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like an acknowledgement of what's going on and how it works, mm-hmm. and just a validation of that. Mm-hmm. And in that place, it just seemed like, oh, and now the energy is freed up to be here with the mm-hmm. process, mm-hmm. which seems to be acceptance.
Just the kindness of, instead of, you know, getting caught up in the self-hate of, well, you know, I shouldn't be caught up in this conversation or this, but to just stand up and just say, well, this is how it is right now, and this is how it's set up, and, you know, to just really support that human, and, yeah, and to just, you know, accept.
Yeah.
This is the process of being a human being, yeah. on the path to waking up and ending suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That feels like that embracing.
Okay, embracing. Yeah. Yeah.
This is reminding me of some very clear guidance is coming through looking at some quotations from a book that Chris and I are looking at, and it seems like there's just so much suffering that comes from listening to voices talking about things that really, you know, there's nothing to be done about it. There's just being bludgeoned by it. Mm-hmm. And so this person is saying, if it's not something that you can control or influence, forget it. Don't listen to it.
Yeah.
And it just sort of made it really so simple. Mm-hmm. Because most of that many stuff that goes on is repeating old stories of reinforcing an identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing, it's not anything I can control. It's like a tape recording that's got mm-hmm. written, you know, in conditioned process,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's just karma that came with the body, I don't know. But it's been really helpful just to consider, does this really have anything to do with anything I can do, or anything that I can move into another perspective about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if not, just just recognize that as the signal to drop it. Not that there haven't been other signals to drop it, but this one seems particularly helpful.
Yeah. So just really, you know, having another tool, another thing to signal
uh-huh.
that, oh, you know, to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this something that this conversation that I'm entertaining, mm-hmm. is this something I have any control over,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, situation? And it's been very helpful for you to look at it that
mm-hmm.
way, and then to drop
mm-hmm.
it. Because, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
absolutely nothing that's within your control.
Yeah, and it seems to just cut through all the cut to the chase. You know, cut through all the whatever else might be on top of it that would be interference,
mm-hmm.
to really seeing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really useful to have another tool to
yeah.
bring us back, as you know, we were talking about earlier, it's presence.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and out of that conversation.
And the need to know that people have been dealing with this forever.
Yeah.
And there's been wisdom forever
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some kind of comfort knowing this has been going on for a while, and
yeah.
that, you know, that folks have been working with it. And,
yeah.
yeah. Brian.
So, I really enjoyed this past week. I always enjoy being here. And I noticed yesterday, basically with an open free evening, that there was a sense of sort of dread of not having anything on schedule and being alone. And it really caught my attention because it's not my normal experience. I'm like, well, what is happening here? And I saw so much in it. Like the one of the things I've seen this week is just how conditioning pulls me away in meditation, in conversation, in, you know, any content I could think of. It pulls me away, basically showing me a little movie. Mm-hmm. And I get sucked into it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like a daydream is how I think of it. Uh-huh. And that I can feel bad about that when I notice that I've been doing that instead of being present. Uh-huh. That it's a really easy one to set up for it. And so dropping that second part,
uh-huh.
You know, I then, and, you know, sort of opens the mind to what was said earlier about the sipping or the unfolding of the blossoming. Uh-huh. Like, you know, the buds begins to open.
Yeah, yeah.
And seeing that I don't always have to go with that. Like, I can see the beginning of it now in a way that I could not a week ago.
Uh-huh.
And that I don't have to go in there. It's like there's an invitation, you know, it's dangled in front of me in a way that I can see it.
Uh-huh.
It would drop that, like, sort of like the man behind the curtain. Like, there's something else that's been revealed.
Yeah.
Like the Wizard of Oz, like there's, yeah. Don't look over there.
Right.
But, oh, but I can't not look over there now. You know, it's great.
Yeah. Wow. So just beginning to, you know, to be able to have that little bit of standing back and see the beginning of what we often call the bamboozle, or, you know, yeah, that's going to be just the gateway to take you off to feeling that and suffering.
And also seeing it as a survival strategy,
mm-hmm.
in this world that I practiced that. I can remember practicing it, filling my time with daydream,
uh-huh.
on purpose as a nice way to get through the whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a lot of practice for that. So, okay, so the humans are a place where maybe I don't want to practice that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And or definitely I don't want to practice that anymore. Well, it still happens.
Yeah.
So I can be compassionate for that.
Right.
As a survival strategy. And what, so last night, it was like, well, there's nothing that's going to happen here, very likely, that I'm not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So something else is very much more worried about surviving.
Uh-huh.
Like just being alone, right? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen?
Uh-huh.
And so I could have gone into it and just sort of had that angst and carried it the whole time, and it was just like this, the grace of curiosity,
mm-hmm.
came. So, and I recorded sometimes, about time I could have said, well, that was kind of nice. I didn't notice any part of the actual being here that matched up with the dread of being alone.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to sort of catch the lie. So, you know, sort,
yeah.
of like, that was not true. And the other thing that happened with it was this morning I heard a voice clearly say, I was waking up, I heard a voice clearly saying, God, I'm kind of getting my butt kicked here. Who is this? And I'm like, oh, I bet you are. From that space, you know, and if I identify with that, which I so clearly wasn't, like I was able to be in a space and I didn't do anything to get there,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
but just practice and show up
right.
again.
Right. Right. There's that willingness of the practitioner to practice. And wow, and I just have to, you know, first of that, hearing that voice this morning, I'm getting my butt kicked. And you know, I love that. So turn around and say, I bet you are. You know, instead of just like, you know, one good look and it's not, someone's not paying attention, could be going, oh my gosh, you know, am I getting my butt kicked? You know, and think it was you, but you were able to say, aha, this is not, you know, this is not authentic. This is not coming from.
Yeah, well, what's actually true? And you know, I'm intended, or I was trained, I was conditioned to believe that.
Yes.
And that, so that when it uses the I, me pronouns, I see things, I slip aside and I sit. And when it uses the you, that I'm a little kid in front of the fence of authority. Mm-hmm. And I'm intended to just go right along with all that and be in the movie.
Exactly.
And this. Different experience.
And just a way different experience.
Yeah.
And I love that too. You know, yesterday at that sickening dread about having that time alone and having, as you said, the curiosity, like, that's interesting. This isn't usually, you know, my experience. If I have an afternoon to myself and then, you know, to see that. Who's really having a sickening dread about this time? You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
The other thing with the assignment earlier, just like all the things lining up for all the grace, the assignment about the childhood memories. One thing that stood out to me was how many of my favorite childhood memories I was by myself in nature, or with a machine, or with an animal, but like not so very many other people around. And you know, I had 44 first cousins. There were a lot of people around. And that's on my mom's side. You know? And so that really just like recognizing now, having that just glimpse of the past and like all of the joy that was there with presence as a child didn't require other people to be around. I was like, oh, it's really interesting that now all of a sudden I'm dreading being alone. And so it seemed like it was just like the whole thing.
All of you there for Brian, you know.
Yes.
There's that, you know, the year-long retreat with that assignment, what are your favorite childhood memories and stuff. How wonderful to have that juxtaposition with an opportunity to have what was actually a favorite childhood memory, an afternoon in nature. You know, and then suddenly it was like it was something to feel afraid of. Or, you know, so just having that support.
It was an afternoon alone without a survival strategy that was scary.
Yeah.
Possibly for the incarnation, like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Because I know. I'm not going to be there dating and stuff in it. And so there's a little trepidation about that. For the human inside, they're like, hey, let's see. It doesn't make sense. The conditioning, whatever, the sulfate, whatever. But come be here for it and see what happens. It was great.
Come be here and see what happens without being in that conditioned survival system of fantasy and removing yourself.
So I've been looking at a couple things. First, grateful for two things. Grateful I'm here this morning. Yeah, I'm so grateful. Yeah, so, and then grateful that I've practiced enough with this no exit thing, because my system has a lot of energy lately about feeling like it's too much. You know, so this morning, I went to church before here, and I'm sitting in this lovely little church in Murphy. I love the smells and the candles and the ha-ha, whatever. Anyway, but the guy talking, I didn't like what he was saying. And I watched myself think, I can't stand this. I can't stand it. I gotta get out of here. And then a couple things. The no exit sign at the end of the dormitory, you know.
Not an exit.
I remember a time when I was here and I thought, I gotta get out of here, you know, and there was that sign on the door. Okay. I just put on a cushion, right?
So apart from my that comes in many. Yeah.
It does. You'll never think of it because I was having one of those moments.
Yes.
And so this morning I thought, okay. And I love that image of the ripples. And the other thing that came up was that, I don't know why this came to my head, but there was a Thich Nhat Hanh thing where he was, you know, giving some kind of talk in the Vietnam days, and somebody came and just started attacking him. And I always wondered how the heck he stayed there. You know, how he stayed there, you know, giving his talk and listening and answering questions when in the face of that, right? So, anyway, I thought to myself, well, I feel this way a lot lately, you know, from the life-threatening illness in my home to the situation in the world or whatever. I'm having a lot of energy that could take me in a conditioned place. And that could. Anyway, it does. Except that I saw in that moment this morning that I have a practice. I have a practice of staying really present and getting curious about, you know, like watching the ripples. I love that. Mm-hmm. Just watching it. All the attention here. Mm-hmm. I might get up, but I'm not going to get up out of a conditioned response a lot. And I think I'll just breathe. I actually like the structure I'm sitting in, and it's comfortable, and the air is clean. And anyway, so it was just fascinating to watch as I moved the attention to this person. And I watched like my body want to kind of sigh so that everybody knew that I did not like that. You know, I did not start to breathe in all of the other ways it does. You know, like, you're not going to let me get up and walk. Well, I'm going to make sure everybody knows. And then I saw the thing that was pointed out on the radio show earlier this week. But, you know, I was completely in judgment. So although I just got to see because I was pausing that I was in that hell of judging, of flipping the one side of the duality or the other. You know, I was not, it wouldn't have been a compassionate for all getting up and exiting. It would have But anyway, it was interesting to watch. So then the thing went on, and then it actually changed. He began to say different things. I thought that was so fascinating. I wasn't sure if I was saying different things or if I was beginning to hear. Because, you know, when you're in judgment, you sort of close down because you're so bright. So then that was over, thank goodness, about this. But then I noticed, like, in my Sikh tradition, there's a sign of tea for shake people's hands. So then I looked around, and behind me, I had no idea these people were behind me, because, you know, I'm crouched and struggling, were these people that I really like. And somebody had come to home from college, who I know, you know, was visiting. And I'm like, oh! And there was so much joy about, and then, you know, it's such a beautiful day, and it's rising, and I'm going to be here, you know. But I'm so grateful for practice, because really, in a lot of places right now, we're, you know, just, you know, when you know it's you. Work, calmness. You know, it's just like, ah, yes. But the ability to not be torn away from life by the sensations in the body that usually throw me into conditioning, but to stay with them and breathe and give that person. And, oh, and then the other thing I was looking at, I know I'm talking, but when the reflex, but just one more thing, when something was being said about Thomas Merton and that word, that was so helpful to me, because one of my first gifts against ego was the cushion. And, you know, in the beginning, I mean, kind of like, I cannot sit for the fight. I mean, really have to score? You know, I can't. And then, you know, over and over you sit and you just see, oh wow. So now I love, so now my mind is supporting and listening, because it's just what, it's the gift of me having willingness to do these things that feel impossible
and then poof, I'm asleep. You know, it would happen on the cushion every time, like right before the bell would ring. I would, oh, I'm asleep, you know. The same with the recording and listening. I pick it up, I'm like, ah, recording, you know, I'm recording because I want to. I mean, actually, I have to, you know. And then I'm recording about, I can't stand it, you know, I got to leave, you know, this is too much, you know. And then all of a sudden, there's that moment when I hear me, you know. I don't know how to explain it, except the mentor is there. There's no judgment. I've just expressed. There's a deep compassion for this person who feels that way and is up against the resistance to force. And then there's wisdom that pours through. So anyway, I've just been looking at all that.
I just started out with the word gratitude. And I just have gratitude for the amazing practice and for the practitioner who stuck with it. And in this period of time, he said, you know, there's just so much, he called it energy. You know, there's just a whole lot of content in Mr. Jekyll, and including the experience in the church this morning. You know, just a whole lot going on. And to just, you know, be called back to something. You know, just over and over and over again, and finding that that's the place, but it's just, there is that ah, you know, there is that being with that's experienced in the recording and listening. There, you know, it's just what we were talking about earlier. There is that, you know, what you were talking to about, you know, that criticism and that judgment. And then there's that opportunity to just be with what has been right there in front of you. Right there in front of you. And to just, even though you maybe entered, you know, the practice maybe entered with some resistance, like, wow. Then there's the gift of sticking with it. And, you know, what's that presence, what's that being with that has to offer. And it generates an immense gratitude. Yes.
Oh, well, I'm seeing a lot of things and a lot of work with very, I experienced it as very powerful last week, the practice retreat, and some powerful guidance with Sherry, and what I was seeing this morning was I was feeling quite tired. I thought, oh, I usually don't look forward to Holy Leisure because I think it's a little boring, but I'm going to really like Holy Leisure today. I'm just going to do it. And I was recording and doing a lot of recording and listening, and it just, I was thinking, well, what's that tiredness, you know, about? And one of the things I started out early in the week with struggling with my koan was to say, well, what is it that I need to be healed? And because I experience these symptoms, especially when I'm under stress, you know, in guidance, it was brought up that maybe you're not sick, which I should have figured out, since the woman who wrote the book, There's Nothing Wrong With You, would say something like that. But in the way she said it and different things, it kind of hit home. And then this morning when I was recording and listening, I was thinking, well, what I'm so weary of is of having ego having taken over my life by making me into a project that had to be fixed. That, like, I can remember it when I was younger, like, well, I know at the time I was 16 years old, and I just read The One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which for those who lived through the 70s, it was kind of a thing, because it was a, the theme of it was, in a sense, don't let them take away your individuality, even if you're kind of crazy. You don't want to be like R.P. McMurphy and give in to the medication and then give in to society and, you know, be yourself. And I knew back then, because my mother, my grandmother was just absolutely crazy. My memories of her chain smoking Salem cigarettes and drinking bourbon and talking crazy. It's like, I'm going to stay away at this. It's a real crazy woman. And my mom abused her children and then was heavily medicated after that. And I remember just thinking, I am not going to be like that. I am not going to be like that. And I just got so determined. And I already started reading psychology books when I was 15, trying to figure out why my mom was the way she was and why I was starting to get some depression. But really, for about 35 years, I've just been, ego has been in charge and said, you have to do this, 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 and this, or you're going to be crazy just like your mom and them. And if you let down your guard this much, it's going to happen. So it's just been like all this.
Yeah, just seeing that you just, you know, and looking at the con, you know, how, what do I need to be healed? There is guidance as well, you know, maybe there isn't anything to be healed. Maybe there is really nothing wrong. And that, you know, and then being able to step back a little bit and see how sapping, or, you know, the energy that it has taken to be, what did you say, ego's fix-it project?
Yeah,
for all this time. And you're seeing how that got put in place. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're also seeing that maybe there's another option.
Yes. There's another option that's and that's very freeing. That idea, after recording and crying, saying, I'm so tired, I'm tired of it. Then just saying, well, that's, you know, so, and then talking to Scott yesterday, some guidance too, about, well, maybe it's time to move a little bit more into the love yourself, love, as opposed to the, like, discipline kind of sort of thing. And I can see that that as being very helpful, because, you know, I suspect, I don't know, we never know, but the demons that I have, the symptoms that I will have, I don't expect them to, like, go away. Because I tried to beat them, but they're going to be there. But the practice of this Zen practice of having your attention and not, like, getting all heebie-jeebie when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just realize there's an opportunity to direct the attention. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to follow that other conditioned path that creates the heebie-jeebies. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's another opportunity. And I think you said that, you know, there was one of the things that was presented as an opportunity to be in love, or to be with love. And love.
And here is a marvelous place to mm-hmm. experience that, because it can't come from other people. It can't. I mean, my marriage has been stressed because my wife has tried to fill some of that gap, but she cannot do that. I have to do it for myself, and that's where freedom comes, is when
we're right back to the beginning conversation. I was one of the, you know, when Rebecca was talking about we have to work on our own salvation still, which is not in those words, but yeah, that's what you're describing. We have to find that for ourselves. Mm-hmm.
And just one more thing. I have also had the thought a time or two, I'm really getting my butt kicked here. But now when I hear that, I go, ego is getting its butt kicked.
Yeah.
And it's not liking it.
Yeah. And there's a smile over that. Good.
Do we have a minute?
Oh, certainly.
All right. Just several things this morning that I've been hearing that went with my morning, and I'm always grateful for that. So what I've been looking at in this time, when those of you who've been here for a while don't know that our country is just in shambles, and people are. I read something recently where people were actually talking in terms of civil war, that it's that divided, and that and there's so much agony on both sides. And so, of course, we have our Make America Kind Again hat, so looking at how do we do this? And we have some great role models, so I'll give it away. The thing that inspired me to write the thing I was writing this morning was a poem by a Lutheran minister that maybe you're familiar with. It was they came for the communists, but I didn't say anything because I'm not a communist. They came for the socialists, but I didn't say anything because they came for the trade unionists, but I didn't say anything because I'm not a trade unionist. And then they came for me, and there was no one to speak for me. Which I thought paired nicely with Jesus saying, as you do for the least of mine. And I helped him out because it's 2,000 years that said, my brothers and sisters. And I know he's happy with that choice. And then with what the Buddha taught, cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. So how do we do that? How do we not just go to a place of, well, I can't say anything because I don't want to upset anybody. And I don't want to go to that awful oppositional place. I want to stay in love, and so probably the only way to stay in love is just to keep my mouth shut and stay home. Because if I engage at all, I'm going to run into people who are in whatever place of hatefulness and judgment, which is where we can find ourselves really quickly. And it's such a great encouragement to practice. So I think is going to be such an important place for our practice right now, to choose unconditional love, to choose loving kindness, but not from a passive place, from a this is kind of a learning to say yes to no. I can love you like crazy, and it's not okay to treat people like that. And I'm going to do everything I can to encourage everybody not to treat each other that way. And because it is so tempting as spiritual types to fall into a place of positive judgment. In other words, to know how other people should be and how the choices they should make and the decisions they should make. And to lose sight of the real, to me, the real possibility for us and the place that we want to live in, which seems like kind of the theme that so many people had this morning. And I was listening to Rebecca. Don't try to reflect me. I'm okay. The old fire hydrant image. When Rebecca was talking about the inspiration that comes through and then getting caught in doing. And how do we avoid that? How do we stay in that place of clarity and let life lead us into action or into activity? And of course, what occurred to me is Thomas Merton, I think, died in the 60s. And we're talking about him this morning.
So it's not like he just sat in a cave somewhere. You know, he wrote this stuff down so that it would be available to inspire others. And I project he did that from a place of guidance, not a place of better ideas, of ego jumping in to make something happen, but really practicing staying in that place of being guided by the unconditional, guided by love, and by kindness, and then letting the action flow from there. I think everybody I project, all of our role models have said this, right, and have lived this. One of the things I was looking at is, we can point to the big names, the big lights in the hero realm, and we can point to the big lights in the hateful realm. But there are millions of people who have, through time, chosen loving kindness, have chosen to live from unconditional love, often at a tremendous cost. So I wanted to talk about it today, and I wanted to write about it today, because I think in a dualistic, egocentric world, it is so easy to think that we have to have a solution that is going to be on one side or the other of something. And the difficulty of remembering that the only side we're ever on is unconditional love, which does not mean just standing there as someone does things that one doesn't agree with. That certainly Jesus didn't do that, the Buddha didn't do that, and then let's go down through time with the people who did not do that, who said, we're not going to leave unconditional love, and this is what I'm going to put my energy toward. This is what I'm going to take a stand for, and I'm going to invite others to take a stand with me.
Just living. I mean, we drop in and taking it to the street. Taking that unconditional love.
Yes.
Into the street. What does that look like?
Yes. I've told most of you about sending a picture of that cat to my grandson, who is, the man will talk to anybody about anything all the time, and the more disagreement there is, the happier he is. And he'll spend days talking, listening to people, and that sort of thing. And he said, they'd love the hat. And I said, well, there's one on its way to you. He said, I'll wear it every day just for the conversations that we'll start. That's it. Instead of hiding out and being afraid that somebody's going to disagree with me or somebody's going to get upset or whatever it is, to take the opportunity to practice, not to be good at this,
right?
Because we might not be, but to practice choosing unconditional love while coming from a place of the deepest clarity that we can have in any given moment.
Yeah. Once you take that hat and just leave it at home, because it's like, oh, it might stir up.
Yes.
How can kindness stir up kindness? But, and it's like, but to put it on.
Yes.
And to just be open.
What happens?
See what happens.
See who sparks.
And to just, oh, here's another opportunity to practice unconditional love. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.